WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 23rd of March, 2022. If you like what we are doing here at 91.5 WMFO, consider donating. Go to WMFO.org and click our donations drive tab to see how you can help us keep it freeform. Obviously, the station is having a donation drive. There's merchandise on there too for donations. I haven't seen it, but I've read that there is. Okay, we're gonna follow up from last week's bookended show with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is, I just called it a medley for my show's purposes, of The Shepherd Matter. These all, these three shows all aired March 18th, 19th, and 20th of 1956. In that time, Elvis put I don't know exactly what date in March, but he put a $1,000 deposit down on Graceland. Boy, how things have changed. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour. We'll go ahead here with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the conclusion of The Shepherd Matter. Thanks.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Miss Streeter at Dr. Shepherd's office.
Yes?
Dr. Shepherd gave me your hotel number. He said you were to come in for a head x-ray.
Let me talk to the doctor about that.
Well, he's out on house calls right now, Mr. Dollar. He'll be back late this afternoon. He seemed very concerned over
you. He ought to be. A friend of his banged me on the head with a gun this morning. That's why the x-ray.
Well, could you possibly come in and have it made? Doctor was most insistent.
All right, Miss Streeter. I'll be right over.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Richard Porter, 480 Webster Boulevard, Providence, Rhode Island. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shepherd matter. Expense account item 4, $1, cab fare from my hotel to Richard Porter's office. Porter was sympathetic.
You know, I feel very responsible for this, Mr. Dollar. I hired you to look into all
this. Oh, it'll go away, it'll go away. I've been hit on the head before. Hey, do you have anything to drink in here?
Oh, sure, sure. You never can tell when a snake will come up and bite you.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you are.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I suppose you came in to give me your expense sheet now that it's all settled.
Not exactly, Mr. Porter. It isn't settled for me.
Well, certainly you know I'll assume any medical expenses involved here.
That no, I'm not talking about that, Mr. Porter. Sit down. Now, look, there's something going on here, and we might as well have it out. You hired me to investigate a client who wanted to buy $80,000 worth of straight life insurance, right?
Yes.
Now, that client explained why he called for that insurance. Not to my satisfaction, but he explained it. He said a man named Paul Forbes had threatened his life. Threatened it because Dr. Shepherd had advised Forbes' wife to get a divorce.
I know you didn't believe this, but the facts now seem to bear it out.
I went over to see Forbes this morning to talk to him about his threats. I managed to get my name out, and Forbes attacked me, so I got this. Then Forbes ran out. Mrs. Forbes and a servant in the house gave me first aid. All the time they were doing it, they were apologizing for Forbes and his violence. Finally, Dr. Shepard came in, called the police, and told them to pick up Forbes.
And the police will pick him up if they haven't already, and Dr. Shepard will prefer charges...
And that won't be that, Mr. Porter. Not as far as I'm concerned. Dr. Shepard's story is still leaky.
I'm sorry, but I think it has more credence than ever in view of what's happened. You told me yourself his wife and the servant admitted Forbes had threatened Dr. Shepard's life.
Oh, I believe that part. But Shepard lies so much you can get to believing him.
What lies, for heaven's sake?
Oh, for one thing, his reason for not calling the police right away. I mean about how delicate Mrs. Forbes' condition was. She looked pretty healthy to me this morning. Another thing, he described Forbes as a man with homicidal tendencies. Now, Dr. Shepard's supposed to be an expert on behavior. And he thought that if I talked to Forbes, I might settle the matter peaceably. But Forbes attacked me as soon as I told him my name. I didn't get a chance to talk.
Well, Dr. Shepard has no control
over... He felt pretty sure I could talk to Forbes. If you don't like that, let me go on. What reason did Forbes have to hit me? He didn't know me from a load of coal. Somebody put him up to it.
Who?
Who do you think?
Shepard, for some reason?
Shepard was the only one who knew I was going right over there.
But why?
I don't know.
What would he gain?
My business for an X-ray.
You're joking now.
I suppose I am, but I got a headache. I feel off.
Oh, here. How about Mrs. Forbes?
Oh, here. Thanks. Oh, she seemed like a genuine enough person. Not sick the way I expected her to be. Someone slugged her recently. There was a bruise under one eye.
Shepard said her husband was an erratic, ruthless, violent man.
Well, look, I'm stubborn, Mr. Porter. I still think Shepard's been lying to me. If for no other reason than I think I know the breed.
What's all this got to do with the insurance application?
Well, that's another thing I don't know. Expense account item 5, $3, cab fare, to Dr. Shepard's one-story building to have my head x-rayed. Shepard was still out, but Miss Streeter did the honors, almost in silence. Outside of sit still and hold it, nothing much was said.
Well, the picture's okay, Mr. Dollar. I looked at it. I didn't see anything wrong. Of course, the doctor will call you when he's had a chance to see it.
Swell.
You must have got quite a blow. That's a nasty bruise you have.
Oh, it's pretty good, all right. He swung his gun hard.
Well, the doctor will be back about mid-afternoon. He can call you at your hotel?
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming in.
I want to ask you a question, Miss Streeter.
Yes?
Are you in love with him?
What?
Are you in love with Dr. Shepard?
Well, that's rather my own business, isn't it? Unless, of course, in your investigation of whatever you're investigating, for some reason I'm under your scrutiny.
Well, I suppose it is, and I suppose I can take that to say yes.
I become rather angry with you, Mr. Dollar, but frankly, you seem rather ridiculous.
I suppose so. He's a liar, isn't he? I mean, Shepard. One more question. I told you on the phone a friend of Dr. Shepard's did this to my head. Now, did you ever ask me who that friend was? Well, I think you'd be curious about a thing like that, Miss Streeter.
I think I have a great deal of work to do, Mr. Dollar.
Expense account item 6, another $3, some more cab fare. This time back to my hotel where I picked up my rented car, filled it with gasoline, item 7, $5.30, and drove out to Pawtucket. At the home of Mrs. Clara Shepard, I explained my name and business to an elderly man who answered the door. He asked me to wait a moment, then returned and said Mrs. Shepard would see me. She was a bright-looking, gray-haired woman in her mid-60s, elegantly groomed and obviously well cared for. We went through the politenesses, then got down to business.
My son applied for $80,000 worth of life insurance and named me beneficiary.
That's about it.
I wonder what he's up to.
So do we.
You mean so do I. You don't trust anyone, do you, Mr. Dollar?
He said his life had been threatened. He told me he wanted to make certain you were well taken care of in case anything happened to him.
Oh.
He was lying, wasn't he?
I haven't seen him, talked to him. Even had a Christmas card from him in 3 years. Maybe he does worry about his poor old mother now and then. I'm flattered.
What you're saying about him isn't very flattering.
Oh, I don't think Charles ever thought much of me as a mother. Still doesn't, I'm sorry to admit. But then I don't think too much of him as a son. So there we are. Is it too early for a cocktail, Mr. Dollar?
How do you explain him already having a $20,000 policy on himself and wanting to kick it up to $100,000, you the beneficiary?
No explanation. That's why I suggested a cocktail. To my friends here, Charles is a successful doctor in Providence who calls me faithfully every day, sends me gifts, and is always assured that I am well and happy and occupied in my old age. I guess I like you, Mr. Dollar, perhaps because, with all your gruffness, you might be nice to your mother. No, Charles and I aren't close. Never have been. I can tell you this. I don't need his closeness, at least not in a financial way. If Charles were to die and I received $100,000, it would mean a rather difficult tax problem. If he were to die, part of me would die too. I'd like you to have just one martini with me. And then you may go, Mr. Dollar.
I had the one martini with the tall, stately woman who struggled against tears. It was an old struggle with her, increasingly difficult, I guess, as the years kept on. We talked no more of her son, or the insurance, or the threat on his life. I left there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I drove back over to Providence and got to Dr. Shepherd's office about 5:45. A broad-shouldered man in a tweed suit was in the reception room. He got to his feet when I walked in.
Dr. Shepherd?
No. Don't I know you?
Yeah, I was thinking the same. Wait a minute. Yeah, your name is Dollar. You're an insurance investigator.
Yeah, you're Phil...
Phil Crosby, yeah. Providence Police.
Well, I met you in New Hartford once. Oh, I didn't know you were down here.
Hey, you must be the one. As Dr. Shepherd called downtown about a threat in his life and said an insurance investigator had been slugged trying to help him out of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, where is he?
I don't know.
I rang that buzzer. There's no one around at all. What's this all about?
Well, a man named Paul Forbes threatened the doctor's life. He slugged me. You got a pickup out on him yet?
No, not yet. Trying to pin the doctor down all day long. Been out on house calls, emergencies, everything else. We have to get his signature on a complaint.
Oh, I thought that was all taken care of by now.
Well, hello.
Oh, hello. Well, hello, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Miss Streeter. This is Phil Crosby from the police department.
Police?
I'd like to see Dr. Shepherd, miss.
Is anything the matter?
Just want to see him.
Well, goodness, he was here 10 minutes ago. He sent me over to the pharmacy to pick up these things. Oh.
What?
We had an emergency. 1213 Putnam Street.
Got a note from him?
Yes.
May I see it, please? But no name on this, Miss Streeter. You recognize the address at all?
No, I don't. Doctor wouldn't take a random emergency unless it were very unusual.
This might be unusual, Phil.
This is down by the water. How bad off do you think Forbes is?
Mad, had a gun, plenty rough. I rode down in the police car with Phil Crosby. I had a feeling about the acuteness of that emergency. As a matter of fact, I had a feeling about the acuteness of everything that had happened that day, from the time a half-crazed man had slugged me with a gun. The feeling was heavier than ever when we hit the neighborhood.
Come on.
All right.
Wait.
Oh, what?
1213 Putnam Street. That'd have to be that vacant lot over there. This is 1240 here. The rest belongs to the warehouse.
Yeah. Phil.
Huh?
That car empty on the plates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Dr. Shepherd's car.
Motor's still warm.
Must be around here somewhere looking for the address.
That's a dead end there.
I better call in for some help. Fog's coming in if he's wandering around here.
Yeah. Phil Crosby went off to find a telephone and request help. I stood by Dr. Shepherd's car, waiting and listening and smoking. Nothing happened. No one cried out. No guns went off. Then Crosby drove up in the police car.
Come on, report's in.
A report was in, all right. We drove 2 blocks down the street where a small, curious crowd of people had already gathered in the cheerless fog. A uniformed man from the Harbor Division was standing over what appeared to be a bundle of clothes lying in a heap. We bent over it, and Phil looked up at me with a question mark.
That Shepherd, Johnny?
Yeah, that's him.
Yep, I'd say he's been dead less than half an hour.
A liar is still lying, even though he's dead. Johnny Dollar.
Bill Crosby, Dollar. Were you in bed?
Nope.
Good. Put on your coat and come on downtown.
Can't it wait till morning?
Nope. Want me to send somebody out to pick you up?
Are you talking about an arrest?
I might be, Dollar. Whatever I have to do to keep you around.
I'll make it under my own steam, pal.
15 minutes. Room 203, City Hall, okay?
I may take 16 minutes if I feel like it.
And maybe you'll need longer. I want a real good story about Paul Forbes. A better one than you've told so far.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Richard Porter, 480 Webster Boulevard, Providence, Rhode Island. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shepherd matter. Swindle sheet item 7, 10 cents, one newspaper. It carried the story of Dr. Shepherd's murder and told how his life had been threatened by Paul Forbes earlier in the week. Obviously, Dr. Charles Shepherd had been lured to his death by Forbes, who had telephoned him, pretended to need a physician, waited until the victim appeared, and then shot him down. The police had an APB out for Paul Forbes. All parties concerned were notified. The deceased was survived by his mother, Mrs. Clara Shepherd of Pawtucket. Amen.
Come right in, Dollar. Sit down.
There were about six people in Crosby's office, among them Richard Porter, who had hired me to investigate Shepherd because of a suspicious insurance application. A uniformed officer from the Harbor Patrol who had discovered Shepherd's body. And two other men from Crosby's staff. I told them how I had been hired, that I didn't believe all of Shepherd's story about the threat on his life. I told them about Forbes slugging me for no apparent reason. I also mentioned the insurance matter had never been satisfactorily explained.
Well, it's never going to be explained as far as I can see, Dollar.
Oh, I'll find an explanation, Phil. You solve your murder and I'll do what I have
to do. We've got it solved. All we have to do is pick up Forbes, you know that.
I don't know anything. You get huffy with me on the phone and you start talking about arrest and I don't know anything.
You said that when you went to see Shepherd yesterday morning, he waved a gun at you, a .32.
That's right.
It wasn't on his body. He knew Forbes hadn't been picked up. His life was in as much danger as ever. Why didn't he carry the gun?
You know, that's a pretty good question, Phil.
Yeah.
What else?
He allegedly went out on an emergency call tonight. No little black bag in his car. No little black bag by his body. What doctor goes out on any call without his bag?
Oh, I wouldn't let that worry me so much. I'd find out if it was an emergency, or he knew who was going to meet him when he went out.
I thought you might have some ideas.
Have you talked to Mrs. Forbes?
Of course I've talked to her. She hasn't any idea where her husband might be hiding. She's sure he killed Dr. Shepherd. That servant in the house is sure. He told me about Shepherd being threatened by Forbes. Shepherd told you about being threatened. Forbes slugged you, slugged Mrs. Forbes. Been running around town like a madman all day. But everything you say and every way you say it, it comes out Shepherd was lying.
I did it on purpose. I wanted to worry you to death.
Yeah. Well, every officer in this town has Forbes' description and the license of his car. We ought to get him before the night's out. He's the boy.
Good luck, Phil. He was a good policeman with a lot of doubts. And he was mad about them. And that's what it generally takes to get matters straightened out. I found Corrine Streeter at the morgue, standing beside the marble slab on which her late employer had been laid. She looked pale and wan in her stiff white uniform and blue nurse's cape. Her eyes were red with tears, but no sound escaped her. Then she looked up at me once, sighed, and started out of the place. Wait.
What now?
Well, I'd like to help you. I...
Can you help him? No. No, you can't. No one can.
I tried.
Who did it?
Well, the police say Paul Forbes shot him. It looks that way from all they can gather.
Over Mrs. Forbes?
Yes.
Oh. They're looking for him, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, you're something of a policeman, Mr. Dollar. Why aren't you out helping them or something?
Please, Miss Streeter, I know we've
I'll
had words.
I'll answer that question you asked me earlier today.
What?
You asked me if I loved Dr. Shepherd. Yes, Mr. Dollar, I loved him. I loved him more than my whole life.
When she said that, and for some reason I don't know, I had a feeling that I was hearing the first bit of unembroidered truth I'd heard in 2 days. It didn't make me feel any better, but it did clear up something that had been in the back of my mind working its way to the front. Expense account item 8, $6.70. A steak, 3 martinis, and an order of sliced tomatoes. I finished eating at 2:30 in the morning. I really didn't want it, but I did want to sit down and do some thinking. After that, I climbed into my rented car and drove out to Dr. Shepard's office building. Expense account item 9, $5 even. Bribe for watchman.
I shouldn't be doing this, you know. Might lose my job over it. But since you're from the insurance company, I guess you're all right.
I sure appreciate it.
Too bad about Dr. Shepard. Nice fella.
Yeah, very nice.
What is it you think you'll find? Police been here till almost an hour ago, poking around.
You know if they found anything?
Oh, sure. Doctor's emergency kit. Heard him say he didn't take it with him when he went out in that last emergency.
Uh-huh. Well, I won't be long.
Oh, I'm going to come right in and watch you.
Shepard had been a thorough man, and from all evidence, he and Miss Streeter kept and operated an efficient file system in the office. However, he had kept no medical history of his prime patient, Pauline Forbes. As a matter of fact, in checking over both the patient's files and the card files, there was no evidence to indicate that Mrs. Forbes had ever been a patient of Shepard's, which seemed strange in view of the fact that he told me he treated her for 14 months or better and ended the treatment by advising her to divorce her husband. What's more, he had never mentioned that Paul Forbes had been one of his patients. But an entry dated some 2 years before disclosed the fact that Dr. Shepard had examined, treated, and discharged Paul Forbes as a patient. These two developments supplied me with all of the curiosity I'd need for a while. Nurse Corinne Streeter's home address was duly noted on Dr. Shepard's phone book. Oakdale House, surprisingly enough, on Oakdale Street. Special rates for nurses. Room 205.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Dollar.
How do you feel?
Not too good, Mr. Dollar. I only got home about 15 minutes ago. They kept me down there pretty long. Then Dr. Shepard's mother came. Do you want to come in?
Yeah, thanks.
It isn't much of a place, is it? I mean, I haven't straight...
Well, things like tonight aren't easy, I know, but... Look, Miss Streeter, I wish you'd help me and tell me who Dr. Shepard was intending to marry.
Marry? Why, I had no idea.
I was in the office a half an hour ago. He'd already made arrangements for a honeymoon, reservations on the Ile de France for next June. Any ideas?
Please go.
I can't. Look, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help. I mean, was it Mrs. Forbes?
What?
Look, Miss Streeter, things are all wrong about your doctor's death, about what happened before it. It'll all come out sooner or later.
Oh, I suppose it will. It's awful to say this, Mr. Dollar, but Mrs. Forbes was the only person doctors saw socially this last year. And she, of course, is married.
How'd they meet? When her husband was Dr. Shepard's patient?
Yes, that's right. They became quite friendly.
Mrs. Forbes was never a patient, but Mr. Forbes was. Now, what can you tell me about Mr. Forbes?
Well, he came to see Dr. Shepard a year or two ago, then stopped coming in. I believe he requested a copy of his medical history to be sent to another doctor in Baltimore, I think it was.
Uh-huh. But Dr. Shepard kept right on seeing Mrs. Forbes,
yes.
Huh? All right. Do you have any idea why I was called in by the insurance broker?
At first, I didn't. I don't understand what you're trying to do. The police want Mr. Forbes. What does it all mean?
It'll sicken you, Miss Streeter.
Well, tell me if you know. Tell me, please.
It means the wrong man was killed tonight. I was pretty sure of what I meant when I said that. And I was also pretty sure that Phil Crosby in the police department had recognized the setup. It so happened I had a head start in the way of information. And though it was 6 o'clock in the morning by that time, I decided to use it.
Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Mrs. Forbes. I'd like to come in.
What is it?
I should have tumbled to it right away, but your husband fit the part too well.
Look here. I've been through quite enough today with the police and all out looking for Paul and Dr. Shepard being killed.
Stop looking pained and tired. I'm the guy that's tired. I'm the one who was going to be the star witness when the state tried Shepard for killing your husband.
What?
Why not get a star witness for free? Why not make a suspicious insurance move so an investigator would be called in? An investigator who'd back up a self-defense plea for your doctor and get him off on justifiable homicide.
Get out of here. Get out of here, or I'll call the police.
And you and the doctor sail to France in June and live happily ever after? What's the matter? Wouldn't your husband give you a divorce?
Go ahead. If you say it's that way, Mr. Dollar, and you know everything, then it must have been that way.
Only it got fouled up. Your husband did shoot your boyfriend, after all, just as he threatened to.
Get out of here! You can't prove any of it. Not one word of it.
Oh, you're right about that, Mrs. Forbes. I can't prove anything. Not a thing. Shepard's dead, and they want your husband for it. He threatened Shepard. And they'll get him for it, and that's that. But you have something to live with for the rest of your life. Your doctor's gone. He'll never come back. Or maybe you can just have a cup of coffee and forget all about it.
Get out! Get out! Leave me alone! Leave me alone!
What?
Yeah, that's it, Phil. That's what was supposed to happen. Shepard had it planted all over town how Forbes had threatened his life. He had witnesses. He had me, even. All he had to do was go out and shoot Forbes any place, any time. But Forbes got him first. Can people get by with this kind of thing in our courts of law? If and when you get your hands on Paul Forbes, will he have any kind of defense?
Oh, he'll get him, Dollar. The other I can't answer. What you just told me can't be proven. I don't see how a lawyer can do much for a guy who threatens another man's life and then finally guns him down, do you?
But it was Forbes who was the marked man all this time. He was supposed to die. If it could be proved that Forbes was a patsy, that the doctor intended to gun him down...
The judge and jury, Johnny. When we get Forbes, he'll be arraigned and indicted for first-degree murder. Don't worry about that part. The rest is up to the court, out of our hands. After all, we're pretty sure Forbes shot and killed Dr. Shepard.
Hang up that phone, Dollar.
You still on the wire, Johnny?
Hang it up or I'll blow your head off.
Paul Forbes looked the part of a fugitive. His coat was ripped in several places. The knuckles on his left hand were torn and raw. There was mud on his shoes and pant legs. His eyes told the rest of the story. He was blazing mad. He had a gun. And he wasn't afraid to use it. Find out how hard it is to kill a lie. Sometimes you have to kill it twice. Johnny Dollar.
This is the hotel operator, Mr. Dollar. Were you cut off?
Tell her not to let any more calls in here. Go on!
I was cut off, but I'd rather get some sleep now. Anybody phones, just take a message.
All right, Mr. Dollar.
Over there. Sit down. Put your hands on your knees. Now, just so as you and I understand each other, you make one move. Wiggle a finger, I'll empty this gun right in your stomach. You understand me?
I understand you, Forbes. You're crazy. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Richard Porter, 480 Webster Boulevard, Providence, Rhode Island. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shepard matter. I was pretty sick of it and with it when I had Paul Forbes visit me in my hotel room about 7 o'clock in the morning. He'd used a gun in front of me once before to crack my skull. I decided I'd try to avoid that again. So I sat down and I played good. It didn't seem to please him a bit.
You were out to my house about an hour ago, weren't you?
Yeah, I went out to talk to your wife.
Yeah, I saw you. I was across the street watching. I followed you here. Fixing up another deal, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about, Forbes.
I followed you here so we could have a little talk. And we're going to have it, you and I.
You ought to put that gun away and let them take you, Forbes.
Where do you live?
In Hartford, Connecticut.
I mean, where do you live in town here in Providence?
I don't. I live in Hartford.
Where do you practice?
Practice what?
Are you trying to get funny with me?
I don't practice anything here in Providence. I don't live here. I'm just here for a few days.
Doing what?
Working on an insurance matter.
Insurance matter? You're licensed to practice law in Rhode Island?
Oh, you've got something all wrong, Forbes. I don't practice law. I'm not a lawyer. I'm an insurance investigator. I tried to tell you that yesterday morning when you cracked me with that gun. I was called in by Dr. Shepard. He said you threatened his life.
You're lying to me. Shepard called me yesterday morning and said a lawyer named Dollar was on his way over to talk to me about giving Pauline a divorce. You're a lawyer.
I'm what I say I am. If you hadn't started swinging that gun butt around, I'd have told you why I was there yesterday.
You got a billfold or something?
My coat pocket inside on the back of that chair there. I think I know why Shepard called you and told you I was a lawyer. I think he wanted you to attack me and make me...
Shut up! You and Shepard are trying to pull something to take my wife away from me. I know that much. And now you're trying to pull something to get out of this jam.
You're wrong, Forbes. I don't know anything about trying to take your wife away from you.
You know I didn't kill Shepard.
How do I know you didn't kill him? You threatened him. Half a dozen people have attested to that. I know you had a reason to kill him. I know every time I've seen you, you had a gun in your hands and you've been swinging it at somebody, particularly me.
You know who did it. You're in on it somewhere. You know who killed Shepard, and you're going to clear me. You're going to tell me, Dollar. I'm going to whip it out of you. You're going crazy.
All right. Get on your feet.
He sat in the chair just the way I propped him there. His eyes looked dull and lifeless, as though he were already dead. I couldn't think of anything brilliant to say or do, so I rummaged around my suitcase and pulled out a bottle. Then I found a pair of glasses in the bathroom and poured a couple of drinks. When I came on out, he hadn't moved from the chair. He looked crumpled like a worn-out suit of clothes. He made no effort to look at me when I tucked the glass in his hand. Here, try this. Huh? Go on, drink it.
Why don't you call the police?
Now, you say you followed me here to have a talk and find out what's what. Now's the time to talk, pal. This thing isn't the best conversation piece in the world.
Leave me alone. Call him in.
You have something going for you here. This gun hasn't been fired. Do you have another one?
No. No, Dollar, I didn't kill Dr. Shepard. I wanted to more than anything in the world. But I didn't kill him.
Now, look, I want some facts. So let's start with last night. Where were you when Shepard was shot?
How do I know where I was? I don't even know what time he was shot.
All right, let's start with yesterday morning. You slugged me, ran out of the house, jumped in a car, and what happened? Go on, take it from there.
I drove over to Dr. Shepard's office. I was going to have it out with him. He was breaking up my home.
Well, go on. Did you see him?
No. I parked down the street from his office, and then I saw him jump in his car, and I followed him. He came back over here. I knew my wife must have called him to take care of you.
What happened then?
I went over to the park and sat and tried to figure things out. You don't know what I've been through this past year.
All right, go on.
Then I went to a bar. I was hungry. I hadn't eaten all day. I got a couple of sandwiches, and then I had some drinks. I don't know how many. Anyhow, the more I drank, the more hopeless everything looked.
Did you call Shepard?
Yeah. Yeah, I called him from the bar.
Any idea what time it was?
Must have been around 5 or 6. What difference does it all make? I'm cooked and you know it.
Go on, will you? You called Shepard, then what did you do?
I told him I wanted to talk to him about everything that had happened. I told him where to meet me.
You mean you wanted Dr. Shepard to come down and meet you so you could kill him?
Maybe I did have that in my mind. I don't know. On the phone, he sounded so calm and said we could talk it out and straighten it out like gentlemen.
Did you talk to him?
No. I didn't see him at all. I waited an hour and he never showed up. I called his office back and the answering service said everyone had gone out for the day and I didn't know what to do. I got back in my car and turned on the radio, and that's where I heard I was wanted for murder. Dollar, I didn't do it. I swear I didn't. I had reason enough, but I didn't. I knew all about the others, but this was serious.
Wait a minute. What others?
Pauline's always had other friends. Friends. I guess... I don't know. I don't guess I love her anymore. I don't know. I don't think she ever loved me. But I needed her. I needed her more than anything this last year or so. And at times I did love her the way it once was. And I found out what was going on between her and Shepard. She wanted a divorce. I wouldn't give her a divorce. If I had let her and Shepard get away with it, would have been too much to take, to ask.
Oh, this doesn't make sense. Even though you didn't love her and she didn't love you, you wouldn't stand still for a divorce action? It sounds stupid.
I just told you. I needed her so much this last year or so. So much.
Still doesn't make any sense, Forbes. Why didn't you let her go?
She knew she didn't have to divorce me. She knew it wouldn't be too long.
What?
Shepard gave me a year. Another doctor in Baltimore, 18 months. Leukemia.
Don't you see? She would have been free. They could have waited until I was dead, at least. Just that, until I was dead. Couldn't they? Well, couldn't they?
Expense account item 10, $2, sleeping pills. I fed them to him along with a cup of hot chocolate. He looked pretty worn out, and within 15 minutes, he was sound asleep in my bed. Item 11, $4.16, one long-distance phone call to a Baltimore clinic where I spoke with a Dr. Franz Mueller. Dr. Mueller confirmed what Forbes had said. Forbes was doomed with an incurable ailment. Item 12, $0.20, another phone call, this one from the hotel lobby to the coroner's office. I learned that Shepard had been killed by 32 caliber slugs. Forbes' gun, a 32, had not been fired or hastily cleaned. His story was checking out. That left just one small item to be cleared up. Expense account item 13, $4. Taxi fare from my hotel back to the Oakdale home. Special rates for nurses.
Hello. I thought you'd be back to see me. Somehow I'm glad it's you, Mr. Dollar.
Go ahead.
It's an old story. Terribly old and corny. I applied for a job as Dr. Shepherd's nurse 5 years ago, and I fell in love with him that very day. I've loved him every day from that time on. 5 years.
Go on.
I don't know when it was, when he started up with Mrs. Forbes. I knew she was trying to get a divorce. I knew Mr. Forbes wouldn't stand for it. Then one day, last week I guess it was, I heard Doctor talking to her on the phone. He said, there's a way to get rid of him. I knew he was talking about getting rid of Mr. Forbes.
Did they discuss the part about Shepard getting Forbes to threaten his life in front of witnesses so he could shoot him down when the time came?
No, I didn't know that until yesterday morning. So long ago, it seems. You came to see Doctor and then you left. I overheard him on the phone again. He called up Mr. Forbes and said Mr. Dollar was coming over to talk about the divorce action.
And he knew Forbes would be upset enough to attack me.
Doctor was very good about anticipating what people would do in given situations. Even me. I was in the office when Mr. Forbes called last night. I saw Doctor put the gun in his coat. I knew he was going down to meet Mr. Forbes and shoot him, so I followed him. He was walking around in the dark looking for Mr. Forbes with a gun in his hand. I ran up to him and pleaded with him not to be crazy, that Mrs. Forbes wasn't worth it. Then he said he was going to kill me, too. We struggled. The gun went off. I don't know how many times.
I can help you, Corinne. You didn't mean to kill him. He meant to shoot you. When all these other details come out, the most they can charge you with is second-degree justifiable or manslaughter.
No. You're nice. But I can't get off.
Huh?
I guess the police haven't found her yet. I went over and killed Mrs. Forbes an hour ago.
Expense account item 14, same as item 1, transportation back to Hartford. The next time you have a doubtful insurance application, Mr. Porter, settle it yourself or call someone else. Don't call me. As far as I can add up, and I'm not going to recheck the figures, expense account total is $485. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
There you go, the Shepard matter. I thought that might have a little bit more to do with St. Patrick's Day from last week. You know, that's... Well, anyway, that kind of surprised me there. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation here for a second.
Wake up and text. Text and eat.
Mm-mm.
Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. I'd like to add, if you like what we are doing here at 91.5 WMFO, consider donating. Go to WMFO.org and click our donations drive tab to see how you can help us keep it freeform. I had trouble with that earlier and last week. Okay, for the last quarter of the show, I'm going to play a drama there's not too much information on Anne of the Airlanes. I've played the first two episodes before. Actually, it might have been almost a year ago. I never really concluded it. I forget why. Maybe it was this January I did that. Well, whatever. Again, Anne of the Airlanes. All you can really find out about is it was kind of popular because of Amelia Earhart. But, sorry for the year-long gap, but we'll continue this one. Thanks.
Over valley and mountain, river and plain, through wind and storm, rides Anne of the Airlanes.
As Jack Baker pilots the transport ship over the Atlantic Ocean with Anne Burton stowed away in the baggage compartment, his friends back in Springfield are attempting the unraveling of the mystery of the disappearing radio room that apparently comes and goes at the command of the Doc, head of the diamond smuggling ring. Jack's brother Bobby has a clue to the mystery, and co-pilot Pete, with the assistance of Art Morrison and the newly found ally, Zeb Abercrombie, leave the airport to once more visit the hospital. Can it be that the link between the diamond mines and the hometown of Springfield is growing closer? Perhaps Bobby's clue of the Book of Magic will end in the roundup of the smugglers sooner than any of us expect. We shall see.
Zip, you've been all over the world trying to find these smugglers, haven't you?
Well, not all over the world, sonny, but just about.
But this fella that limps, Zip, you say you've seen him around before, huh?
Yes, Pete, and I'm not one to forget a person, not anybody mixed up with them fellers. First time I remember the fella was down in Cape Town. Me and George was just buying our supplies to outfit the safari, and he showed up, sort of asking questions about the Kimberley. He was sort of disappointed-like when he found that we wasn't going that way.
Did you ever see this foreign chap in Africa after the Doc's gang cleaned you out in your mines?
Yeah, for sure did, Art. You see, I made my way back to Leonda. That's on the west coast, and by river it was lots closer than Cape Town. And by jiggity, there he was, all spruced up like he'd hit a fortune someplace. I never thought no more about him being connected with this gang, though, until Bobby seen him just a little while ago.
Could be that it was just a coincidence, couldn't it?
Well, it would have to be a mighty far-drawn coincidence, Pete.
Yeah, I'll say it would after seeing him every place the smugglers are.
That's just what I'm thinking. And I reckon we ain't so far off their trail right now.
Now, fellas, look here. Suppose that we do run into something up there at the sanitarium tonight. Not that we will, but suppose that we do. What are we going to do about it? Just send for the police or what?
Well, let's dig up the real evidence, Pete, and then you just leave the rest to me.
Mr. Morrison, aren't you really working for the United States Secret Service?
Sorry, Bobby. Well, it's sort of a professional secret. But anyway, even a radio inspector would be interested in this case, if only from the unlicensed radio station angle.
Yeah, I guess that's right, but... Oh, well.
Now, just how are we going to get into that sanitarium without anyone seeing us? I've got a sort of a hunch that Doc Tyler won't be exactly delighted to see us again.
That's right, Pete. And he knows me, too. Now, if we just thought and had Aunt Hattie come along with us...
I don't happen to know the gent, do I, boys?
Say, of course, that's it, Zeb. You don't know him. That is, unless you might have met him in Africa.
No, I don't reckon I ever seen this Doc. And I don't think he's ever seen me.
Yes, Zeb. Now, that'd get you in. But how about the rest of us?
Well, now, look. At this time of night, there's usually very little going on in the corridors. That is, except around the floor supervisor's desk. So by keeping close to doors and ducking in if anyone comes in sight, we can all get to the stairs that lead down to the laundry room and into the basement. Oh, do you know anyone that's a patient there right now, Pete?
Sure. Jerry Duffy, one of our weathermen at the airport. He's up there. Had a broken leg. But I don't see how that'd get Zeb in. It's after visiting hours.
All right, Zeb goes up to the door. When the nurse answers, he tells her that he was to call for a report form that he was showing your friend Jerry when he called on him this afternoon. Then it's up to him to find his way to the back of the hospital, open a window on the ground floor where we can get to it and get in, and where we can get out quickly, too.
Sure, Art, sure, but this, how am I going to know what window to open so you can make it?
Well, you just open or even unlatch anyone that looks okay. It's up to us to be able to get in.
Mr. Morrison, I kind of hate to butt into your plans, but look, why can't Zeb just go to the ambulance entrance? That's in the back, you know, and you never meet anyone until you get on the elevator and go up that one floor.
Bobby, you're all right. That's exactly the thing. Do you think you can carry out your part of it, Zeb?
I reckon I can. Anyhow, I'll give the best try at it you ever seen.
Maybe we better park this buggy around here. Won't look right for Zeb to be coming up here in my car. Too many around here know it.
Well, this is just as good a place as any. Now, Zeb, you're sure you've got your part of it?
Yep. I reckon I can go through with it. And I'll find the ambulance door just as quick as I can. I'll see you boys in a few minutes.
Gee, I'll bet you can hear my heart pounding clear over there, can't you, Pete?
It's not pounding anything like it will if Doc Tyler catches us in that sanitarium of his after the way he told us to get out and stay out.
Well, it's going to be up to us not to get caught in there.
How long has Zeb been gone now, Art?
Oh, not over 10 minutes. Probably had to do a little arguing with the night nurse to get in. Might be that she wanted to take him up to the friend's room. I'm hoping for the best.
So am I. But look, Art, about this magic trick that Bobby seems to think that they're using up there to shield the radio room. I can't quite figure out why they'd go to the trouble of using something as complicated as all that, if that is the idea. When all they'd have to do to hide the radio room is to put in a couple of false walls, or if they got in the sub-basement, like this is, just dig out a little more and put in a couple of secret doors.
Yeah, it does look a little funny, doesn't it?
Yeah, but when you stop to think of it, it's not such a bad idea at that. But this room is not being used for a radio room alone, as I get it, but for kind of a workshop as well, and probably one that requires plenty of ventilation. Now, that means that if they tried to conceal it effectively, they would be forced to make it so obvious. Well, to one who has searched homes, those secret panels and false walls are almost self-revealing. But masquerading it as a laundry room, the setup is perfect. For the laundry room is one that requires ventilation. So through a simple twist of the wrist and a few magic words, It's transformed into their workshop, safe from the prying eyes of the federal authorities.
Yeah, a twist of the wrist and a couple of $1,000 worth of equipment.
Well, we won't have long to wait to find out. Say, there's your friend Shadow on the glass on that door. Come on.
Maybe we'll run right into Doc Tyler and...
Don't worry about that, Bubby. But listen, both of you. If a nurse should see you, just be trying to find your way out of the hospital, understand?
I get it. Here we are.
Come in, fellas, quick. Ain't a soul in sight. Left them all on the first floor up front. Our furrin friend with the limp is in there holding a powwow with Dr. Tyler.
There, I told you. That proves that Doc Tyler's the head of...
Wait a minute, Pete. It don't prove nothing, at least not in my book. They were sort of arguing about the salary this furriner, Tyler called him Hans, gets for tending the boilers here in the hospital.
Tending boilers? But he wasn't tending boilers when I saw him. He was working in that room, the one with the radio. And he had some sort of a small machine.
Well, all I can say is that Tyler ain't knowing anything about what this Hans feller does in his spare time, or else he was putting on a pretty good act for whatever nurse is that might be eavesdropping.
Which puts Taylor right back where he was before. Anyway, let's get down those steps and see about this room. They're right over this way, aren't they, Bobby?
Yeah, that's right. You don't suppose somebody will see us?
Not much chance. Not down here. Unless an ambulance comes in.
I hated to have to keep you fellas waiting like I did. Here, these are the steps down.
Yeah, yeah, take it slow. That light at the bottom is pretty dim.
But you're all right when my eyes get used to this. Think we need this little flashlight?
We might need it later, Pete. Don't use it now. It might give us away.
There. There's the door. And there doesn't seem to be any light coming from under it.
Might be somebody in there anyway. Never can tell about these crooks.
Well, we'll just have to take a chance. Now look, Zeb, you stand right here at the door and listen for anyone coming down those steps. Open it up, Pete.
Dark as a stack of black cats. Shall we go right in?
Might as well. Come on, Bobby. Here's your chance to prove your idea.
Hey, if I hear anybody on them steps, do I come in?
No. I think that's the thing, Zeb. Wait a minute. Where's that flashlight? Pete?
Yeah, here you are. Yeah? It's the laundry room, all right. Nothing but tubs, mangles.
Pete, over on that wall. That's it. Do you see that?
Sure. It's a piece of paper sticking out of a crack in the floor. What's peculiar about that?
Doesn't it seem peculiar that a piece of paper would be sticking from between a crack in the floor that should have been put down many years ago? And that paper's new. Look here.
Let me see it. Gee, it's the day before yesterday's newspaper. And it was caught there like it was there when the... Say, then I am right. That crack there in the floor is the slide that the floor works on.
Yep, Bart. Bobby was sure right about this thing. Look here. You can see some grease of some kind if you look right close. You put there to make the things work easy, see?
And those water pipes on the wall there. They just give the place the illusion of permanency, when as a matter of fact, they never move.
Yeah, but what about one of these rooms is when it's shoved back under the ground? How do you get out?
I'm afraid you don't. That's the object. By moving the room, they avoid the use of false doors and covered openings of any kind. Just leaves no outside trace.
Yeah, but how do they make it move? They couldn't have assistance like they do on the stage.
I suppose they use motors and push buttons or even counterweights. We'll have a look. Because they must be able to operate that thing from the inside some way. Put that light over this way.
Somebody's coming down them steps. I closed the door easy-like and... Gosh, I'm getting dizzy or something. This floor is moving right... Hey, do you fellas feel that?
Not so loud, Zeb. It's all right. The floor is moving. That's the secret of the room. Whoever's coming is making it move.
Whoever it is will find us in here. We gotta get out.
They won't see us, Pete. See, that wall moves right along with us.
Yeah, but gee, how are we gonna get out?
I'm afraid we won't, Bobby. That is, not until whoever that is decides to leave, which probably won't be long. There, we've stopped.
Maybe it's the limping foreigner come down to check things over.
Being caught in here kind of makes me feel like one of them animals they catch in a pit. Only the pits are open at the top.
I think we're perfectly safe, as long as they don't suspect we're here. I'm going over that wall. We might be able to hear something.
Shh.
Yeah, I can hear footsteps. Just one person. There's a switch of some kind. He's turned on a radio.
Maybe he's trying to pick up Jack's plane. Can you hear anything?
Shh. Yeah, there's the hum of a transmitter. We've got the radio spotted, all right, and I can hear him. Listen. Does that sound like Dr. Tyler?
I can hear somebody, but I sure can't tell who it is.
That wall sort of changes the sound, I guess. Sounds like he's getting in touch with some airplane, all right.
Yeah. Listen. TS calling VM. He's calling the transport, all right.
And there's the answer. It's Vic answering. V.M. answering T.S. There. He's asking him something. What is your position, V.M.?
Shh. There's the answer again. I wish it was louder. You're north coast of South America. Being forced to land first possible place. Something coming out from the baggage compartment. Oh, unable to open inner door. Signed, VM.
Didn't you hear what he said was coming from the baggage compartment? Anne is hidden in there, Pete.
No, I didn't get it, Bobby. Maybe he said noise.
Nope, I heard it. He didn't say noise was coming from there. What he said was, smoke's coming from the baggage compartment.
Smoke? And from the baggage compartment in which Anne Burton has hidden herself. Will Jack be able to find land soon enough to release her from what may be certain death? Or will a long plume of trailing smoke mark the end of the interstate transport and its four passengers? We know that you'll be tense with excitement and suspense until you hear the next thrilling episode of Anne of the Airlines.
Was Anne of the Airlines. Like I said prior to playing it, there's not too much information on it, and I forgot in the story that Anne Burton, the main female character, she's aspiring to be a air hostess, and then she also works for the Secret Service, like her love interest, the pilot there. Like, but just can't find too much on this. I'll see if the other two are quality to conclude this story of diamond smuggling and concealed walls and radios and all that good stuff. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.
By the rules, get off your duff, searching for clues.